Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This weekend, game developers from around the world will gather at the PAX East Conference in Boston. Tens of thousands are expected at what has become one of the largest gaming events in North America.
But the Boston-based video game company Giant Spacecat won't be attending. That's because Brianna Wu, the company's co-founder and a leading game developer, pulled out after receiving death threats. Wu said she feared for her own safety and for the safety of her colleagues.
And Wu is not alone. Since last August, a vitriolic online campaign has targeted a number of women in the gaming industry. As a result, they've been forced to flee their homes, they've had their bank accounts hijacked, and have been repeatedly threatened with rape and murder.
It all goes back to Gamergate, an online war over the future of the gaming world that has become, for some women in the industry, an extended campaign of threats and harassment at the hands of an anonymous digital lynch mob. Now, if you're not a gamer, it's tempting to dismiss this as some bizarre drama from a weird subculture. But gaming is big business, a $93 billion global industry. And as the Washington Post put it recently, Gamergate is a proxy war for a greater cultural battle over inclusion and who belongs to the mainstream. And as such, it's a battle for our cultural soul. So we're going to talk about this right now. And joining us is Amanda Warner. She's a co-founder and lead animator at Giant Spacecat, which won't be attending the PAX East Conference in Boston. And Amanda, welcome to the show. It's good to have you.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Also with us is Nina Hunteman. She's a professor at Suffolk University and co-founder of the group Women in Games Boston. And Nina, good to have you. Thanks for coming in.
Pleasure to be here.
Listeners, we'd like to invite you into this conversation. Give us a call. Share your thoughts about Gamergate, about this troubling trend of misogyny in gaming. What's it all about? What does it say? What do you make of it? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. Amanda, I'd like to start with you. You and your colleague at Giant Spacecat, Brianna Wu, have received some of the worst of this harassment. Can you tell us something about that? Tell us what it's like to live through this. What have you experienced?
It's been a really exhausting 6 months. I mean, obviously, most of the vitriol has been directed at Brianna, but by extension, also our company. The problem is it's a huge distraction. I mean, there is the emotional cost, mm-hmm. for sure, but also the cost of doing business. I mean, Bree's stuck working with law enforcement a couple days a week, and, you know, has to. There are all these fires that will pop up that she has to go deal with.
I can imagine, though, that this has to be really frightening as well.
It is. It is, very much. I mean, when she received the very specific death threat in October that kind of kickstarted all of this for her, I mean, she texted it to me, and I dropped my phone and was, you know, offering up my couch for her to come stay with me. Since then, I mean, there have been more specific things. I mean, there have been videos, and the level to which people will drill down to, the level of detail, like somebody put together a Google view of her house and then went and compared it to, you know, goofball videos that the Woos have posted over the years, to, you know, comparing the windows to prove that it was in fact her house. Mm. It's disturbing. It really is disturbing.
It's incredibly disturbing. And Nina, let me come to you. I mean, the breadth of this harassment, it's really hard to fathom. I mean, women forced to flee their homes. We're hearing from Amanda this story about Brianna Wu and about her having bank accounts hijacked, having nude photos stolen and published, on and on, repeated threats of rape and murder. What is going on here?
Wow. I mean, it's incredibly complicated. And some of the things that you just mentioned are not just happening to women who work in the games industry. It's actually happening to a lot of women who go public online. I think what's happening here is we're seeing, in some ways, the sort of use of what is a wonderful democratic space, that's the internet, you know, being marshaled to attack, and specifically, you know, increasingly to attack women who are public in both their professions and sometimes just even in their hobbies. I mean, it's not just game developers being attacked, it's actually gamers as well.
Now, defenders of the Gamergate campaign, they will say that this has been a sort of debate about ethics in video game journalism and resistance to political correctness in the gaming community, and they say that radicals doing the harassment really hijacked this movement. Is that a fair characterization in your view?
Yeah, I think that to some extent it is, and that's what's so perhaps frustrating on both sides is that really if the reasonable folks among us sit down and talk to each other, as some of us have had the opportunity to do. We have wonderful conversations about transparency, you know, in game journalism, transparency between industry and players. You know, opportunities for inclusion is usually embraced, and so it is getting drowned out by a small minority with a very loud megaphone, and it's being hijacked by some interests that don't even have any interest or experience in the game in game world as well. I don't want to let, you know, I'm not letting all gamers who might be involved in this off the hook, but definitely I think it's appropriate to say it's been hijacked by larger forces and loud forces.
And how do you characterize this force that's doing the hijacking? I'll come back to you, Amanda. I mean, I'd love to get, you know, your views from both of you on this.
Oh, that's an interesting question. I don't want to generalize because gamers can be anybody. And I think it's really easy to fall into the stereotype of the basement dweller, neckbeard. You know, there are a lot of slurs that get thrown around because they're easy, cheap, and lazy. But it's not. I mean, the gaming demographic now tends to be people my age, you know, in their 30s, adult men. But, you know, it seems to be the more vocal minority usually tend to lean towards men's rights activists. They have found a nice little niche in the movement. And people will say, no, they don't represent us, but you know, they found a home there too.
Nina, I'd love to talk to you about this gaming culture. You said, I understand that you once loved to play first-person shooter games, but you got turned off by the misogyny in those circles, right?
Yeah, I mean, the online portion of first-person shooters. I mean, one of the really exciting things about games today is that you can go online and play with, you know, hundreds, thousands of other people. And that's a really exciting part of being, you know, involved in that culture. What I found, though, is that I didn't really enjoy the trash talk that happens when you game play, because it almost always, in my case and many women I know, became quite sexualized in
very quickly
sexualized. Yeah, and you know, that is not to me fun. That ends up, you know, ruining the fun. And so now if I'm going to game online, I know the person, usually in real life, not always, but I know the person very well online before I want to spend any time with them in that space. And I know a lot of people are making that choice, and it's sad. It should not be that way.
Listeners, we're talking about Gamergate, this troubling vein of misogyny that runs through it, and really the future of gaming. We'd love to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Let's take a call. Erica is calling from Cambridge. Erica, you're on the air. Good to have you.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thanks. Go ahead.
What stuck with me was Nina's point in how you know, being behind this sort of mask or anonymous aspect to gaming, you know, it really lays it all out there that you can say things that you might not ever say in person or if you were side by side actually playing a game with someone. And this sort of these anonymous attacks are just another example of how that aspect of being anonymous makes it okay that they can attack.
Erica, it's a really interesting point. Erica, thanks for that. And Nina, we're talking about sort of one of the aspects of this online world, right?
Yeah, I mean, anonymity is causing definitely a lot of trouble here. Anonymity can be important for communities and individuals who might feel very marginalized or otherwise feel unsafe if their identity is known. This has been very important to the LGBT community to be able to be anonymous but find others, you know, to talk about issues important to your community. But unfortunately, anonymity is also in some ways like the high-powered fuel that is behind a lot of it. I gave a talk recently at a university, and many people in the audience said that they were part of the Gamergate movement. And when we talked to each other face to face, we were able to talk to each other and not yell and scream. And I certainly in no way, shape, or form felt threatened. And it was a really great conversation.
Well, what did you learn from that direct conversation, that give and take with them?
Yeah, we need to be in the same room more often and having face-to-face conversations. I mean, you know, my life is very digital. I embrace it. I study it. I teach it. But yeah, I mean, really just underscored for me the power of being in front of each other and talking.
Amanda, I want to ask you about Giant Space Cat's decision not to attend PAX East. Penny Arcade, the founders of PAX East, said this about the threats. The safety of our attendees, panelists, and exhibitors is the number one priority. Obviously, you guys didn't feel assured by that.
No. I mean, it's with everything that's been going on over the last 6 months and the very, like I've said before, the very specific threats that she was getting, you know, the idea of being on the expo floor just seemed so daunting. Like, we did not feel safe. I came to her and I said, I don't want to do this. I don't want to be looking over my shoulder every 5 minutes. You know, I have a small kid. One of our other employees is very, very pregnant. And, you know, just that constant stress of wondering if somebody is going to start something. You know, the enforcers are great. The PAX, every year we've been, they're present, but they can't be everywhere at once. And, you know, it would be too daunting a task.
Sure.
So,
well, I want to ask you both about what has to be done going forward. But let me get a couple of callers in to the conversation first. Let's go to Catherine, who's calling from Brookline. Catherine, you're on the air.
Yes, I'm here.
Good. It's good to have you. What's on your mind?
So I was just saying that I play Destiny, and I actually don't use a headset because I don't feel comfortable sort of letting the public know that I am a woman playing a video game. And the reason for that is just, I think it's sort of personal. I think that there's sort of, in my own mind, like by letting the other mostly male population know that I am a female player in this game sort of makes me feel like they're going to gang up on me and they're going to attack me physically because it's a shooter game.
Catherine, thanks for that thought. Nina, you were nodding your head emphatically as you were listening to Catherine. I'm just wondering what was going through your mind.
Well, I certainly understand, you know, her sentiment. I mean, I share it. I certainly, you know, as I said, I usually do not use the voice capability. But I have found people who I can play with where I do feel I can play without my gender being sort of the center of the smack talk. And in fact, I just like to play with a sort of mild level of smack talk, let's say. And so I just find those folks. But yeah, I do. I certainly empathize with Catherine, and I think a lot of other women and frankly men do, too. And it's unfortunate. I think the spaces should be friendlier, especially if an industry, and they are, the industry is very interested in broadening the appeal.
Let's go to Colby, who's calling from East Boston. Colby, you're on the air.
Hi. I was interested to hear that the term men's rights is being used to harass, and it was even referred to as strictly a negative thing to have a men's rights issue. Really, they're just human rights, but if you're saying, my human rights are taken away because I'm a man, or my human rights are taken away because I'm a woman, that's a legitimate thing. So can we distinguish between the legitimate side of it and then just somehow using that label in a hateful way?
Sure. I'd love Nina to respond to that.
Yeah, I think if I'm understanding perhaps what she's trying to address, there has been the co-opting of certain political platforms, I would argue, certain perspectives by Gamergate as well. And I don't know the men's rights movement, so I can't speak to that. But I do know many people in the atheist community, and they will often argue that atheism is being used in our name incorrectly or poorly, as well as humanists. I saw Anita Sarkeesian at Harvard a couple of weeks ago, where she was given this Humanism of the Year award, and she said during it that, you know, among the most vitriolic attacks that she, and she's one of the women who's been particularly targeted by Gamergate, have been from those calling themselves humanists or atheists. So I think to that point, there are certainly lots of people using an extreme version of that platform.
Interesting. Let's go to Troy, who's calling from Cambridge. Troy, you're on the air.
Hi. So, you know, what's really sad for me as someone who's been a gamer all their life is that basically I see something that's either a hobby or even part of my identity being hijacked. And at the same time, I realize, you know, that's on us, for those of us who aren't in the vocal minority, for not sort of, you know, countering with, you know, a non-Gamergate gamer identity movement. And I guess I'm wondering, you know, is that just my ignorance? Is there a movement I can support? Or, you know, if not, what should we be doing to create, you know, a new identity or to carve back that identity for those of us who, you know, are completely against what's going on?
Interesting. So is there a community trying to create an anti-Gamergate? Nina or Amanda, respond to that.
Yeah, there's a lot of people very vocal on Twitter who I guess would call themselves, you know, anti-Gamergate or just, you know, question the tactics of Gamergate. But also, just to answer the question of what can be done, speaking up, you know, I think that the way in which an identity is formed is by being visible. And I think that what any gamer who is finding some of the vitriol around Gamergate can do is speak up in any space. And we're seeing some of that. I mean, last night at GDC, which is the Game Developer Conference in San Francisco, you know, there was a standing ovation at the end of the award show because people in the industry are starting to be vocal and standing up against harassment. And we need more of that. We need more players and we need more leaders in the industry to be very vocal that this is not an acceptable way for a culture to proceed.
Well, Troy, thanks for putting that question on the table. You know, I suggested that the importance of this goes beyond the game industry at the beginning of this segment. I quoted Caitlin Dewey, who wrote recently in the Washington Post that Gamergate is a proxy war for a greater cultural battle over visibility and inclusion, a battle over who belongs to the mainstream, and as such, it's a battle for our cultural soul. Do you agree with that, Nina?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think that there is a lot of ways in which this movement, or whatever you want to call it, can be traced to other moments when a marginalized a culture becomes very mainstream. And then, you know, what that feels like after being isolated and, frankly, denigrated by the mainstream culture for so long, gamers are having to deal with the fact that their hobby is becoming incredibly popular across diverse cultures. And part of that can feel like an infiltration. I think it's misplaced. I think it's misunderstood. I think that's why we need more talk and more conversation. But yeah, it's not unlike a lot of other sort of small subcultures kind of finding themselves under the limelight and getting a little uncomfortable.
And Amanda, we have time just for one last question to you. I'm just wondering, what's it going to take to get Giant Space Cat back to PAX East?
Well, I think after this year, we're having more direct conversations with the PAX organizers, and I think we are definitely planning on being there next year. But it is a security thing. It's having a safe space. It's having a zero tolerance of harassment. It's maybe having the PAX, having Penny Arcade come out with a stronger statement of saying, no, this is not okay.
So some work to do for sure.
Yeah.
Well, that's Amanda Warner. She's co-founder and a lead animator at Giant Space Cat. Amanda, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
And Nina Hunteman is a professor at Suffolk University, co-founder of Women in Games in Boston. Nina, it was great. Thanks very much to you.
Thank you.
And Anthony, before we take a break, we wanted to give everyone this update on testimony going on right now in the trial of Jahar Tsarnaev, the Boston Marathon bomber. The court has been hearing from Bill Richard, father of 8-year-old Martin Richard, who was killed by one of the blasts. And Richard just told the jury, quote, "I saw a little boy who had his body severely damaged by an explosion, and from what I saw, there was no chance." He also described how in the moments after the bombing, he picked himself up and told his wife he was going to go be with their daughter, Jane, who lost a leg. And he looked at Martin, his son, for the last time, went back and grabbed his other son, Henry. The jury also saw a video showing Bill putting both hands to his head right after the bomb, and he just told the court that in that video he's trying to process what's happening. Boston Globe columnist Kevin Cullen, who's in the courtroom, is tweeting that, quote, "Bill Richard is showing extraordinary grace on the witness stand. He's recounting the death of his son and the maiming of his daughter."
Mm-hmm. Well, that's That's the latest from the federal courthouse in South Boston. Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Anthony Brooks.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.